Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello all, welcome to episode 2 of the Deuce Bags podcast, a podcast solely dedicated to this glorious sport of tennis. In episode 1, we previewed the US Open, the final Grand Slam of the year, and this episode we are going to review the US Open podcast. And with us, we have my co-host, Umara, who's had a week to recover, but she's still hyperventilating with Andy Murray playing in the background on the Davis Cup. So how are we, Umara?
I'm good, thank you. I'm all right. Yeah, I'm okay. Like I had a week off, to recover after the final. I'm all good now.
That's good. And we also have Daniel Rhodes back with us, who is on mute but going oohs and ahs as Andy Murray is playing and hoping that they make the Davis Cup final after ages. How are we, Dan?
Nervous. Well, not really. It's 2-0 for the moment as we speak. So if he loses that, then we don't deserve the final. But yeah, it's going to be amazing because it'll be Andy Murray virtually winning the Davis Cup on his own. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
That's great. So let's get the show rolling. So let's talk about the finals, the men's final, obviously. Djokovic winning is, what, 10th Grand Slam, I suppose. So Dan, I think you are waiting for this for a week now and not necessarily Umara. So take the stage, it's yours. So how do you think it went?
You've got to be fair. And I think it's possibly the best I've ever seen Federer play that tournament up until the final. And that's more to do with Djokovic's controlling of Federer and the way he manages to, you know, keep the ball where he wants it and gets you running. And then he's got the power shots. He's got every shot, really. And I think there's only one player at the moment who could get near Federer, and that's Djokovic. And unfortunately, he met him when he was on top form, and Djokovic needed to be on top form. I thought it was a shame with the crowd, personally. I think they're both as good as each other, and they're both definitely personalities. So, but Roger Federer is one of the biggest legends ever, especially in the US. He's got a huge fan base there, and you could tell that at Flushing Meadows.
Umara, any opening comments on especially Roger Federer? I thought he looked really good, as Dan said, tried to keep the points as short as possible and went for the kill as early. I think once Edberg has come in, there's a definite change in his game plan, is at least my thought process. So, go on.
Yeah, I think I agree with Dan. He played brilliantly up until he played brilliantly in the final as well. Just, you know, there was some, you know, Djokovic is just a better player at the moment. But, you know, he sailed through. But I've seen in other Grand Slams as well, he'll sail through to the semis and the quarters, and then, you know, it just sort of comes undone at the end. So it's just those really top players, I think, you know, he's not maybe up to that, you know, their peak anymore. Disappointing, I think, personally. I mean, I watched, that rain delay was annoying because, you know, I had work the next day. So yeah, I watched.
Yeah, that was terrible. There were a few of that.
It was, and my son wanted to stay up. My son wanted to stay up and watch, and I said, "Well, yeah, okay. It starts at 9, and we'll see how it goes." But then, obviously, he had to go to bed. You know, there was no way he could stay up. But then, and it started, I think, after 12 o'clock, and it was crazy. I had to stay. I was up till I think 3 something. But then, when Djokovic won the third set, I just kind of, you know, I had lost a bit of hope then. But I don't know why I feel like Roger Federer could have won this one. This was one of the ones I thought he let slip a little bit. There were the points. He had break points. He had opportunities to win sets. And I just think he was a little bit passive. I was screaming at the TV for him to just take risks, just go for it, run to the net, you know, do whatever. But I just felt like he let some of this slip away. I think he says he doesn't watch his matches back at the end, but I hope he does. And I hope he sees, you know, that if he could have tried something a little bit different. He tried to rally with Djokovic and that just never works.
He was so aggressive against Wawrinka.
Yeah, and
didn't take it onto the final.
Yeah, I know. And I was thinking, I was like, just go for it. What have you got to lose? You've lost a couple of finals to this guy now and you've got to do something. You've just got to go for it and go a bit crazy. You know, if you lose the point, you lose the point. You know, you lost it anyway, didn't he, in the end? And I just think he was a little bit passive on some of those massive points. Like he had break points at the end to level it up and he didn't do that. And you never know. I mean, maybe Djokovic would have won anyway, but you just never know. If he had have leveled it up in the fourth, what might have happened?
You'd have been up till 5 o'clock in the morning.
I would have. I know. I had to be up at six. I had to just. It was insane. It really was.
Actually, I was watching till the first rain break, and then I went off to sleep, and then I didn't get up at all. So I switched on in the morning to see the news, and it was showing live. This was around 6 in the morning. I was like, live. Are they playing 7 hours? No, because I didn't realize the extent of the rain break. I was like, what is this? Some 40-37 going on in the 40-39 going on in the fifth set over. Then I realized the rain break was like huge. And it was perfect for me. I got up in the morning. I went to the gym. Gym also had the finals on. And I chose every equipment in the gym where I could face the TV. That was the only day my wife was actually saying, let's go. But I was like, let's stay. Let me do some more stuff. And I was watching the big screen, and once the match finished, I came. As Umi said, I think the big points is where the game slipped by. I actually thought with Federer's form, he could have done far more better, but I think the big points slipped away.
Yeah, I think so. I think he let this one slip, and it's a shame, really, because how many more Grand Slam finals is he going to be in? Mind you, we've been saying that for a few years now, and he manages to creep in a few here and there, so you never know. But
if he carries on the same level as he is now, he's the second best player in the world by some distance. Andy Murray's not near them two.
Yeah, but Djokovic is just, you know, so far ahead that he's even, you know, he's miles ahead of Federer at the moment as well. I mean, I know Federer's beaten him in the past and recently as well, but you know, when he's on his game, I just don't think anyone can beat him right now. And the rankings, I think, what is he, 4,000 or 5,000 points or something ahead, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, so there's no one catching him next year. Even if he doesn't turn up.
I was actually hoping a lot just due to the Cincinnati Masters and how Roger played there. So I was actually hoping something similar, but didn't go to plan. So since we have talked about the men's final, let's also talk about the whole Federer issue and the sneak attack by Federer. So, Dan, have you heard Boris Becker's comments? I'm sure you would have read about it.
Yeah.
Comments?
I read the article you sent to me. I wasn't aware that it had its own little acronym, the same. And I don't mind it. I think you should do anything that's within the rules. Becker was clearly annoyed by it, wasn't he? Saying it's a bit disrespectful, but I think it's a good tactic if it works. You know, if he's got points by it's putting him off.
It's not coincidental that Becker is the one who's come out against Federer at least once or twice now. At least he's already made comments before, if I remember, once after he took over as Djokovic coaching side. There have been far more comments from Becker than anyone else I can think of in whole of Roger Federer's career. So I was actually surprised because I thought that was a good tactic to put away his opponents. And as you said, it's very much legal within the rules. So I'm not sure what was there to complain about actually.
Didn't Becker say that if he'd have done that against him, that he'd just hit the ball at him?
Yeah.
I'd take that as well. You're going to win the point, aren't you? He's got to get up to the service line to be able to do it. So I don't see anything wrong with it. I can't see why Becker's moaning.
And with the kind of serves these guys just serve out these days, it takes some guts to do what Federer actually did.
It takes incredible hand-eye coordination, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Umara, any comments on that?
Yeah, he said something about Boris Becker said it was disrespectful. I didn't quite understand what he meant by that. I think, you know, he was just annoyed by the whole thing and it was kind of working and everyone was talking about it. Maybe he wanted to sort of shift the attention. You know, nobody was really talking about Djokovic that much, you know, apart from the fact that he was, you know, the best player and he's going to win and everything. But, you know, Federer was maybe stealing the headlines and I don't know, maybe that annoyed him. And I know that in, you know, obviously in the past, in the 80s, 70s, 80s, there was lots of rivalry and the players didn't like each other very much and things like that. And he's, you know, that's not really the case anymore. So maybe he was just, you know, thinking about what it was like in his time and how they would have dealt with it. But no, I agree with Dan. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. If a tactic works for you, why not? Go for it. I mean, I love the way he reinvents himself and changes things up in his game. And that's what's kept him going all these years. So why not?
What did you make of the crowd? Were you all for it?
Of course. No, but it's not just... we didn't just see it in the US Open final. We've seen it lots of times. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, Dan, at the ATP World Tour Finals when Murray played Federer. Federer got a bigger cheer than Murray as he walked out.
Yeah, it does every time he plays him.
Yeah,
even at Wimbledon.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what it is. I do know what it is. Everybody loves him. But, you know, he's just, you know, transcends kind of all kinds of boundaries and borders with people. And, you know, everyone just warms to him. He's, you know, what is it? Recent poll, he was the second most respected person in the world behind Nelson Mandela. That's a bit crazy. That is crazy. Fair. If you think about it, he's not a politician. He's not a... I mean, I know he does all his charity work and things like that, but that's takes some doing to come second behind only him. So the guy's got a lot of respect all over the world, and you know, he's a likable guy. There's not many people who don't like him. I can't think of any anyway. But yeah, it's just he just has that reaction wherever he goes. So yeah, I wasn't surprised with the crowd, and especially against Djokovic, there's always that thing that, you know, the crowd love him a bit more, Federer a bit more than Djokovic, and Djokovic doesn't really like it, and just he still beats him anyway, so it's all right.
But I also found Djokovic postman comments really gentlemanly, if you could term it as that. He's accepted what it is and just gone on with it. As a Djokovic fan, what do you have to say, Dan, about this postman's comments? You must have read it, right? About how he accepts the fact that Federer is popular all over, or whatever we have discussed. But he's just got on with this game. He knows what he has to do. And his single-minded dedication actually just eliminates the crowd, I think.
That's what he said. He said he needs to earn it. And Federer's had a much longer career and he's won a lot more. And I think, in my opinion, I think Djokovic is a better personality, you know, with the impressions and stuff. So I don't see any issue with it. It's something that you have to deal with. Just coming back to the final, I've just had a look at the old stats and... In the final, Djokovic converted 46% of his break points, 6 out of 13. And then you look at Federer, 4 out of 23 for 17%, and that's why he lost. Because if you have 10 more break points than your opponent and only convert less or fewer than what he does, too fewer than what Djokovic did, that's the key. If you create break points and then aren't taking them, that's how you're going to lose to Djokovic, because not many people create 23 break points against Novak. So when you do, you need to take advantage of that.
I think Federer should have taken a leaf out of Djokovic's book when he, you know, when he won those US Open semifinals, when Federer had the match points, and he just went for it. I mean, I think he said he closed his eyes at one point and just hit that return winner that he hit a couple of years ago. Just take a risk, just do something. I mean, you know, he had, like you said, he had plenty of break points, just didn't take them. So he was a little bit passive for me, anyway.
Yep, I agree. I think with players like Serena and Djokovic, you actually have to be abnormal to actually stand a chance. The kind of form they are in.
Abnormal, I like that.
not the exact way what I wanted to say, but you
so,
get...
so was Roberto Vinci abnormal then?
I think for the kind of game Serena had, you could term it, her gameplay was... I think her playing quite a lot of doubles actually helped her in that. Actually, Panetta got to the semifinals of the women's doubles as well. So I think that has helped them at least this year. So moving on to the women's final. So did any of you catch the finals?
I caught bits of the final. I watched the semifinal with Serena, the whole semifinal, when she lost. I was devastated. I was actually more devastated with Serena losing than Andy Murray, which is weird. But I thought Serena just in the third set, I don't know if you watched it, the third set, it was something like 2-2. And Serena was winning points and cheering like she'd won the match. And you could see Vinci laughing at her. She was just giggling, going, I've got you here. Why are you cheering every single point? You're the favourite. You're the one who should be winning this. And you're cheering every point like it's a massive thing. And I just thought Serena just lost it mentally in the final set. It's like the pressure was too much for her. And if you saw the build up and all the US coverage, they were absolutely, you know, the tickets for the women's final selling out quicker. Everyone was talking about Serena. Everyone was assuming that she was going to win. I listened to the 538 pod and they were talking about it and saying it's one of the biggest shocks in Grand Slam history. You know, it was just huge. And Vinci was amazing in that third set. And to come back from 6-2 in the first, to lose the first set 6-2 to Serena and then win the next two. Wow.
What were the odds on her beating Serena then? Did you know? Do you know, Dan?
I don't, not off the top of my head.
what about the odds on an all-Italian final?
I've done quite a bit of really, really tiny trading on tennis. And I would say after that first set, she would have been close to 100-1 to come back against Serena in that game. And I know Serena was massive odds on favourite to win the tournament, never mind that match. Mm-hmm. So it was just a huge... I don't know if it's a bigger shock than Japan beating South Africa in the rugby yesterday, or Norwich beating us today at home. But
don't, please.
But it was a huge, huge shock and absolute credit to her. And I thought she'd gone in the final. You know, it wasn't there. There's no spark, and Panetta just controlled her.
I think she was so happy to be in the final. She was just... I don't think she was focused, really. Panetta seemed like she really was, you know, zoned in and knew exactly what she had to do. Vinci was just, I think she just thought it was just fun time to be around.
They both retired as well, didn't they?
Both of them? Okay, I thought Panetta, it was just Panetta.
Maybe Vinci did as well. I'm not sure. I'll have a look.
I also think that every pre-match where Serena came out and literally said, no, I'm not thinking about it. There's no pressure. We are not thinking about it. Just kept piling on the pressure each match as she came. She kept on insisting she's not under pressure. She's not thinking about it. But you could clearly see like it was literally hollow words where every thought process was. And as Dan said, the way she reacted in the third set, it was very clear what it meant to her.
Yeah, I don't know why you would say that in a press conference. And I think her mother turned around and said the complete opposite, which was, you know, just made the whole thing really rather silly. But yeah, her post-match interview was, I didn't like that. I thought she was really bad in defeat. I didn't like that. I know obviously she was upset, but she was rather a bit rude to the journalists. And I'm not sure about her reaction there. She could have been a bit more magnanimous in defeat. I don't know.
She's not used to losing, though.
Yeah, she has lost in the past. It's not completely, you know, unheard of.
She's rusty.
She's rusty in doing, yeah, after a defeat of doing an interview. That could be an excuse, yes. clutching at straws there, but there you go.
So, Dan, we are going to talk about two personalities. One, we will go through Andy Murray and his tournament. You could argue that it was a disappointing tournament. And we'll also look at the fact that this is the first year Rafael Nadal has not won a slam in 10 years. Last year, considering how much he's fallen this year, that's like huge feat to imagine what he's done in the last 10 years. So go for it. You can choose whomever you want to talk about first.
I'll start with Murray with a sideshow of Kyrgios in that first game, because I have never, ever in a Grand Slam seen a player on a break point or an important point that he can just play the easy shot, then attempt it through his legs and put it out. What is he doing? What is he doing? I was in a state of shock watching it, going, "That's an actual point. It's not, you know, he's not love 30, love 40 down. He's not 40 love up, 6 love, 6-1 up. It's a massive first round Grand Slam match, and all he had to do was play a simple forehand to the other side of the court and wins the point, and tries to do it between his legs.
Who's this, Kyrgios or Murray? I didn't
Kyrgios,
see that.
Kyrgios, yeah. Oh, Kyrgios, right, did it twice. And I was just like, this guy's crazy, absolute crazy. Because if I was his coach, I'd just say, I'm going to get a new player. I don't want anything to do with you, because I can't teach you anything if you're just going to be that is disrespectful for me. I know it's showboating and, you know, sometimes players do skills at football and what have you. But in tennis, there's absolutely no need. You do it between your legs when you have to, when you can't get onto the backhand or the forehand and there's only one shot. He had loads of time and he just does it between his legs and hits it out long. And I'm just, anyway, just ridiculous. And then Murray's tournament was hugely up and down. I don't think he was at peak fitness, to be fair. He sounded quite ill after the first 3 or 4 days. And then Kevin Anderson just served better than pretty much anyone else in the tournament. I don't think anyone maybe Federer, maybe Cilic, but Kevin Anderson's serve was just too much for Murray. And it's not often you say the person serving against Murray is too much, because obviously Murray's strength is his return. So it was just a shame. I didn't think he ever really got into the tournament. He had a tough first round, and then, you know, it was just ill. So yeah, real downer, but you know, what can you do? It was still enjoyable to watch Federer's tennis, and it's not often I say that. Go on, what about Nadal? What do you reckon about Nadal?
Yeah, first non-slam year in the last 10. Is it done, or is it like a slump which Federer had in between, if you remember, a few years back, and nothing went right for him?
I think so. I think we said that on the last pod, didn't we? We thought he'd struggle. Yeah. He needs to get back to the level of peak fitness.
He was really poor, though.
Oh, he was. He has been all season, really. I haven't seen a good Nadal performance. Did he? You know, I've never seen. I remember Murray beating him in a clay court final, which I never thought I'd see in my life. So he's definitely not the same Nadal. And Nadal's only been surviving winning a major every year by winning the French, you know, by winning that so many times. Yeah. He only needed to win one. So that's kind of why he's done it. And then this season, his clay court game wasn't even there. So, yeah, it's a shame. I hope he manages to get his fitness or sort his knees out. But knees are a tough one in tennis. They don't get any better, do they?
His greatest strength was just to keep the point going, not making errors. Then you would be thinking the point was done, and you would change the weakness to a strength. And I think that's what we have not seen, at least in the last 18 months now.
His record this year has been in the Grand Slams, quarterfinal, second round, third round. So you're right when you compare it to maybe the slump that Federer had. But yeah, he's... I don't know. I've been reading up, and some people saying that he might just benefit from a change of coach. But, you know, Uncle Tony's so part of his life that I don't know if that's possible. But yeah, I think maybe that might help. I mean, just a different perspective, a different, you know, idea, some different ideas. It can get a bit stale after a while, can't it? One person can offer.
Yeah, but his whole game is based, you could say, I'm not sure whether it's the right way to put it, but you could say it's like what you say in football as counter-attack, literally. His whole game premise is based on a reactive counter, just to grudge it out till someone loses. It's like last man standing on a tennis court. So I'm not sure, what is there a change of style we need, or he just needs to get fit, is my question.
Yeah, I don't think they can change his style. Like I say, he just runs and gets it back, and he's got the big forehand. He hasn't got a big serve on clay. He just seems to keep it in all the time. I don't know. You know, he hasn't got... The thing with Federer's got all the shots. So just a different coach gives you a different focus on some areas of your game, and you can use strengths that haven't been strengths before and turn them into strengths now. Whereas with Nadal, I don't think he's got the range of shots, the range of ability that Federer and Djokovic have got. So, yeah, I'm not sure coaches do it. It's, like you say, it's fitness.
So was it just his stamina that was pulling him through all these matches? I mean, obviously he's talented. I'm not saying he's not talented, but he's, you know, it's more hard work than talent, as where maybe the opposite with Federer.
Absolutely. There isn't it? Because Nadal hasn't got a good backhand, has he, really? He's got a massive top-spinning forehand. He rarely comes to the net. His serve's not particularly fast, but his stamina was better than everyone's until Djokovic came along, and Murray's kind of overtaken him now. I'm not sure what he can do, and it looks like it's going to be a sad decline. I hope I'm wrong. I do hope I'm wrong. I like Nadal.
So would you say this is the best quartet you've seen, though, Dan, play together, if Andy Murray makes into the quartet?
It's the best era of tennis by some distance for me. The standard now. Federer wins that tournament every single year playing like that, but he's got one guy better than him. Djokovic is, for me, has taken tennis to another level. And then Andy Murray would have probably won 8 if he were playing when Sampras and Henman were playing. So, you know, it's just a ridiculous standard. And then you've got Wawrinka, you've got other talented players out there. And, you know, that's the difference. And that's why a major now means so much. And if Federer can get another couple, I think those slams would be the best of his career. And I think he'd probably admit that afterwards.
There's just something which has come up on my mind off the cuff. And I was discussing with a couple of my friends, and there are a couple of them who had the view that Federer seems to be struggling in the slams just because it's best of five. And though he wins it in three, it's just compared to a normal tournament, it's one set extra every round. And you have more rounds than your normal Masters. You have more sets. And there is a viewpoint that it at the end catches up with his age. So, Umara, going to you first, what is your opinion on this viewpoint? Do you think it has some validity?
I don't think so. I don't think you can argue from the fitness point of view, because I think, you know, he's fitter, you know, than a lot of the guys on tour, probably just one or two who are more fitter than him. But it might be a mental thing. You know, maybe he can't sustain that for the whole five sets. And, you know, back in the day, five, six, 7 years ago, when he was winning everything, you know, nobody came into the match thinking they had a chance against Federer, when now they do. They can, you know, everybody who he plays in the first, second, third round, they have a belief that they can beat him. But when it comes to the end, you know, when it comes to him playing Djokovic or Nadal or Murray, it's possible that it's a mental thing. I don't think it's a fitness thing. I don't think so anyway. Don't know if Dan agrees.
I don't agree. I think, didn't I say this in the previous pod? I said the reason I was talking about it with my friend, in fact, it was my friend who said it. He said, Federer, you know, Federer won the Masters Series before, and it was just a week tournament, and he only have to get to the Sunday, and it's only 7 days. And that's when he beat Djokovic in the final. And then he said to me, if it gets to the reason he's not doing it in the majors is because even though his game's just as good, his stamina isn't what it was. Because of age, you know, he's not as young as Djokovic. He's not as fit as Djokovic. And Djokovic, when he gets to that final, when he gets to the semis, he is fresh. Whereas Federer doesn't, and Federer probably played the best tennis out of the whole tournament, but he just didn't have that fraction of a percent that you need in the final when you're playing. Like I've just been saying then about the break points, if he's fresh and he's mentally fresh, physically fresh, he's going to win more than 4 out of 23 break points, and which is what he did in the final against Djokovic the previous fortnight. So, I think it is the fitness. And if he wasn't playing Djokovic, he'd have beat them. Because like Kamara says, he is still a fit player, but just not as fit as Djokovic. And when your games are very similar and you're both playing to a similar standard, the tiny percentages are your mental freshness and your physical freshness. And I think, the final for me showed that Federer wasn't quite there 100%.
Well, even though it's over 2 weeks and they have a day off in between, and Federer won all his matches quite quickly.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, Djokovic did as well, I think. I don't know how much time they had on comparable or games comparable. But when Djokovic is now at his peak, which he has been this year, I think, to be of a higher peak than possibly the best player of all time is a big standard. And so, yeah, just got to say that Andy Murray's just won the semi-final of the Davis Cup for Great Britain. So,
done, Andy.
First time in about 50 years. And if they win it, the first time in about 90. Who are they going to play? Is it going to be Czech Republic or?
Is it Argentina?
Argentina, yeah. And Belgium, that's it. Belgium.
So when is that semi-final? Is that?
I think that's currently on, so we need to. Oh.
That's also going on.
Interesting. And that's going to be after the ATP World Tour Finals, the week after the final?
Yeah, and I hope they play it in Glasgow again. I don't want it to go down at Wimbledon.
Well, they were saying if they play Belgium, they'll play in Belgium. But if they play Argentina, it will be in Glasgow.
Yes, because Belgium are the higher seeds, aren't they?
So I see. I'm not quite sure of the Davis Cup rules, but I think we'll come back to that later. Maybe you can give us a quick overview, because I'm not sure how some of that works.
So Belgium are currently trailing 2-1, I suppose. Dan, is that right?
Yeah, the Argentinians won the doubles, which is crucial to win the doubles in any Davis Cup tie, especially if you've got strong singles player. It just gives you a huge option. And who was it? Burlock and Meyer defeated Bellemans and Darcy. My pronunciation's terrible, but yeah, and it's on a hard court as well indoors at Belgium. So we'll see. I'd like Argentina to win, so they're playing in Glasgow. Personally,
because I think if Yeah, if they play in Belgium, it's going to be on an indoor clay court, apparently. So that's no good.
That's absolutely no good.
So we're supporting Argentina then, are we?
Yeah, I'm going to watch that later. That's a big... I genuinely think if Argentina win and they're playing in Glasgow, that Andy Murray can win another three games. Because did you see them yesterday in the doubles? Him and his brother. They were superb.
Yeah, really, caught some of that.
Yeah, really, yeah. You know, encouraging each other. And after a little bit of spice between them, when Jamie beat Andy recently in a doubles match, it was nice. It was nice to see. You know, they seem to have such different games. I just think they should make their mother the head of tennis in the UK and just say, how do you make tennis players? Because there seems to be an issue with us in that we like to keep the British players here and coach them here when she, obviously, famously, she sent them to Spain, or she sent Andy to Spain because the facilities weren't good enough here. And if you gave her the responsibility to nurture players how they needed to be nurtured, she's clearly very good at it. So instead of paying...
Isn't she the Fed Cup team sort of...
Oh, is she?
The head of the Fed Cup team. I think she's something to do with that as well.
She used to be head of tennis in Scotland. And she's obviously just focused on all on her sons.
Well, she knows what she's doing, so, you know, it's not a bad shout.
Exactly. So, yeah. No.
But I love the atmosphere in the Davis Cup final. You just don't get that in any Grand Slam or anywhere, even the US Open final. I know that was it was buzzing, but the atmosphere in the Davis Cup is something else. I was just watching the Andy Murray match and... It was really, really, you know, it was brilliant.
You get that on a Sunday at Wimbledon when it rains a lot and then they let the public in rather than...
Yeah, I remember I know. Those kinds of, you know, just people really enjoying themselves,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah. Rather than the reserved Wimbledon crowd sometimes, you get people coming in who aren't usually there and it makes a difference. Same with the Olympic final. That was quite rowdy as well because they didn't have elite tickets. So, yeah. It was good, and I genuinely hope Argentina win, because if Belgium win, there's no way we're beating them on clay.
Really? No chance?
I think they're specialists, and their specialists could beat Andy Murray on clay in a singles, and it's very tough to play five-set clay court matches in 3 days. You know, you usually get a break when you're playing the French, day on, day off, whereas in the Davis Cup, it's 3 in 3 days, and if the first one goes to five...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Like in this game, if Murray had gone five sets in the first singles, they wouldn't have played the doubles because it would have been too much on court. So I think that's what makes a difference. And obviously clay court points are a lot longer, so you get more tired. You get tired. So I'm not sure it'd work on clay. But I hope I'm wrong. I do hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, India just got knocked out of the Davis Cup. They lost 3-1. I think the whole problem was they literally everyone in the whole world assumed that India will win the doubles. I think as Dan said, that was the most crucial, and we had really solid doubles pair, but could say that they haven't played together and they lost. Like, literally, that was one of the ties in the bag, but unfortunately, they lost to Czech Republic, and the singles was never the big hope for India. So 3-1, India has been eliminated now again, the playoff rounds. It's been last 3-4 years we have lost in the playoff rounds. We played Serbia once Now this year we played Czech Republic. There was no Burdic, but still we lost. So everywhere we seems to be losing. And I think you could also say that Pace played in the Davis Cup after a long while, and him being the senior pro, it literally became mandatory that he had to play, but it was not very clear that they looked. I think Bopana and Pace together didn't look like working in the doubles, and they lost really tamely considering the really great record of Pace. I think in the opener, he has one of the best Davis Cup records, if one can talk about that. So I think it was disappointing, but always next year is there. I think double seems to be the main hope for India at least, and losing the doubles literally killed the tie.
Which group is it? Is it the World Group or is it the one?
Yeah, the World Group playoff.
I remember lots of them for Britain. I remember going underneath the one below that when it was when Andy.
Yeah, yeah. Every year we literally go down, then start. Then last 3-4 years now we have been at this playoff level. We just can't seem to get past it because, as you said, we need one solid single. Every year we have won the doubles, but we need one solid singles player. I think that's where we have been having problems. The players are nowhere ranked close to the in the top 100 at least. We had Somdev Verman, but he's got injured in the last 18 months or now and he's fallen off the rankings. I think that's been a problem this time around. I think lack of real singles ability and losing the doubles literally killed the tie.
I'd change the format of the Davis Cup. I'd have two singles the first day and two doubles the second day and then one singles to decide it if it's needed. I think the one doubles match on the second day is not enough. And I don't think it's fair to have four singles and one doubles. I'd much rather see a balance between doubles and singles. It might promote the game of doubles as well more. And it just gives more people a chance and different styles of play and different players. Rather than just like we've seen with the Great Britain team this year, you've got an amazing singles player. And then if he can just possibly get into the doubles as well, then he manages to virtually win all the ties by himself. And it's good for the GB, but I don't think it's what the Davis Cup should be about. It should be about having your best five players and getting the skills and the different levels that they've got in the doubles. And that's what I'd rather see, rather than just one player winning both singles and a doubles game. And then, like, the drop-off level to the next singles player in the UK is horrific. You know, you've got... Was he ranked 300 or something, Dan Evans, when he played Tomic the other day? You know, that kind of disparity is... I don't think it's healthy. Not for a team sport.
Yeah, for Czech Republic, we had Rosol playing for Czech Republic and he's in the top 15, I think. Must be, I think. And we had Robert near the top 100. So, a huge disparity there. Real lack of singles players is killing the Indian Davis Cup team. But at least year on year, there's an improvement being seen. And I think there are a couple of new players coming up. So, I think that's good signs at least. But this hurdle needs to be crossed. It's been quite a long while since we crossed this hurdle.
But Shri, you had some success in the US Open, didn't you, in the doubles? A couple of Indian winners there. So you want to tell us about that? I'm sure you've been holding in all this while. Let it out.
Yeah, remember episode one, I said if these girls turn up, there is no chance anyone is even going to dream about winning the women's doubles. And as we discussed, there's little no chance. They swept all opposition. They had a slight stumbling block in the beginning, but once they got into gear, like literally they just swatted away their opponents. Now, I think Hingis now has what, close to 20 majors, I think, across all categories. I think Hingis has just swept off majors this year. She's won two with Sania Mirza in the women's doubles. She's won three in the mixed doubles with Pace. So 5 Grand Slams in the year for Hingis.
How old is she now?
Not sure. If somebody can look up, must be what, 33, 34? I'm guessing.
Okay.
I'm not sure. She started so young, it looks ages ago.
Yeah.
She's like Afridi.
I thought you were going to say she's 40 or something.
When she was like 14, I remember seeing Hingis start. One of the youngest I've ever seen. She's 34 now.
Oh, right, okay.
So you said that right. But yeah, she started one of the youngest I've ever seen at Wimbledon. And then didn't she stop for a while and then come back?
Yeah. She had huge foot injuries. She's come back this year. But actually, she started playing this World Tennis League and that's where Pace and Hingis got together. So then they decided to give it a go in the Grand Slam. And through Pace, she got in touch with Sania. Because Sania was playing with Bettany Sands. Matic Sands was her regular partner. But she switched. And the problem, the great thing with Sania and Martina was they paired together and they won the first two tournaments, I think. At least they won the first one they started. So there was huge rise of experience. Now, like, there's no competition in that field literally when these two play together. And great thing with Pace, now he's in the open era, he's won the most mixed doubles now. He's moved ahead of Mahesh Bhupathi. He's won 9 Grand Slams now, 17 all over the career. So great career. Three Grand Slams at this age, what he's now, 40, 41, I think. He's going to give a chance till Rio Olympics, and he's going to see, that's going to be his 7th Olympics. I think he's played from Barcelona 92, I think.
7 Olympics?
92, 96, 2004, 8, 12. He missed one in between.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 96 he won the singles bronze.
Is that spanning 23 yeah. years or something? That's ridiculous.
Wow. He's 40 or 41 now.
Okay.
Have Hingis and Thingy ever played this Williams sisters much?
I don't think so. I don't think they are taking double seriously more than you could think about Mirza. The problem is Mirza and Hingis' game are so complex. Mirza has a huge forehand. I usually call a forehand as time bombs, literally. That forehand is like unplayable in doubles, especially when you consider women's doubles, the power exhibit. Her forehand is like literally unplayable. And so just Hingis is at the net, just ending points away, swatting away volleys. So it's literally like a day's work for these two. But Pace is what has impressed me. 3 Grand Slams at the age of 40. 100 plus partners, 17 Grand Slams, 9 mixed doubles. He's won with both Martina Navratilova and Martina Hingis. Imagine Pace and Martina Navratilova, though. One was 36, 37, another was like 50 plus.
Why is it, do you think, that there's a greater level of longevity with doubles players? Is it less running? More experience?
You're asking especially with Indian players?
In general, you know, there seems to be, Nat Ratilova was famously, she went on for a long time in the doubles. At Wimbledon, I remember a player went into her 40s. You know, and there's quite a few older doubles players, unsuccessful. You know, they seem to be challenging. Do they kind of take it more seriously than some of the singles players are?
Yeah, I think you should also remember at that age, the area coverage required is also very less compared to singles. I think that's sustainable. And the ranking points, major ranking points up for grabs are at the slam. So you can afford to skip one or two tournaments in between. And especially if you have the gulf like what Hingis Mirza have with some other teams, you could afford to skip tournaments if you didn't pick it the last year, because you're not going to lose points. I think you could afford, and the games are shorter, obviously. So that also helps. But with respect to Pace, I think he knew ages ago that singles was not his forte. And I think that is the problem with at least Indian tennis. There is no huge support for single players. Everybody who seems to have achieved now is in doubles. So infrastructure support is not there. Financial support is not there. And their game is, the power game is not suited to Indians. You wouldn't call their game based on power. It's more of finesse and hand-eye coordination. If you see Pace at this age, 40, his hand-eye coordination is like incredible. You wouldn't believe some of the shots he pulls out. I'm like, half the times I see his games with my mouth open. It's like unbelievable his hand-eye coordination. I think that's what suits his game. I think finesse and touch game are the forte at least of Indian players, looks like currently. So I think I see most of them succeeding in doubles rather than singles.
It makes no sense for 43-year-olds to have better hand-eye coordination than the younger players. But I mean, if that's the experience to know and anticipate where the ball's going, your reactions don't need to be as quick, do they? Because if you know through experience where the ball's going, you can get there a little bit quicker. Because I noticed Andy Murray yesterday made quite a few errors in terms of positioning, in terms of anticipation, and he's just not used to having only one side of the court to cover.
Singles players do need to play doubles. I think it helps the single game far more than people are thinking. The ability to judge angles is like incredible if you play doubles.
And volleying,
I think it's just
volleying.
Scheduling, isn't it? You just can't fit it in their time.
Yeah, that's the problem. The scheduling is what is the killer. I think ATP are not also doing great to promote the doubles. They came with this, like, removing the advantage and all. I don't know. I think it's still on, right?
Except
the Grand Slams.
There's nowhere near enough promotion of doubles, and it's not taken half as seriously or covered anywhere near as much. You know, the only time I hear about doubles is when Jamie Murray's doing well. It's strange. They only ever mention the doubles when there's a Brit doing well, and I think that's unfair because I'd like to see it more. They only ever, you know, they don't show it. And if they showed it more, then people would watch it. If they covered it more, people would watch it. And you've got to be fair. Some of the men's singles games aren't as exciting as some of the doubles matches that you see. In terms of actual tennis, you know, there's long rallies and there's great volleys, and you know, when they're all volleying it together over the net, you know, you never get that in singles. It's serve, return. The doubles, I'd like to watch it more.
I actually grew up watching the Legends doubles, and it was like so much fun. I can't tell you, I've never even been entertained till then watching singles. The Legends doubles is something to watch. It's exactly what you described, especially players like Leconte playing and all. It's hilarious to watch. It's like you can't believe they're actually pulling off stuff which they do actually. Legends doubles is the thing to watch.
Is the scoring a little bit different in doubles as well? Because I know they don't have the advantage, do they? And then
non-grand slams.
The third set, I don't know if that's just in the ATP World Cup.
It's a race to 10.
So is that all across in all tournaments? I thought maybe it was.
Yeah, non-grand slams.
And in the Grand Slam, is it just the usual three sets then? Or is it five for the men?
I think Wimbledon has decided it won't be. I think other Grand Slams. Or is it not only the finals? I don't think they follow that rule. If I can recollect. I think only the final, they don't follow that rule. They play like traditional. But usually all across the year, it's like there is no advantage. It's a race to 10. That's what they follow. I don't like this race to 10, to be fair. I usually don't watch the third set. If it's one set, because it's literally like what your penalties in football.
Yeah, it's like a tiebreaker, isn't it? And then you could have the person who's not so deserving of the win it, if that makes sense. Because tiebreakers are really unpredictable. Anything could happen. It's just a point here or there. So, yeah, I understand.
Even in tiebreaker, it's a difference of two is the main reason. Here, it's literally a race to 10 with the difference of two. So, it's like once you reach 10, the game ends.
Even if it's 10-9.
Oh, I think there is a difference of two, but it's the question is as a deciding set, I don't like the rule. That's what I'm trying to say.
Exactly the same as a singles tiebreak, but it's to 10 and not 7.
Yes,
they have to win it by two.
Usually, you don't have a tiebreaker in the deciding set, at least in Wimbledon. I preferred it the old format. They wanted to make the game. Actually, ATP's tried to sell it as more attractive, but reality was they wanted to make it far more shorter.
Scheduling,
it's a
isn't
shame, it? Yeah. It's a shame. I don't like the first to 10 either. It's not tennis. You've got to have a set before you get to a tiebreak. You can't just have a set as a tiebreak and first to 10 points. That's not fair.
The
best of three is not a big match, is it?
Yeah, and I'm not sure in doubles, especially the sets don't last long. Because the points are way shorter compared to singles. So it would be a question of what we are talking, 30 to 40 minutes maybe in a set. So I'm not sure how much difference is 30 to 40 minutes going to make actually.
Agreed.
I'm not sure. Are there any other points you both want to talk about? Year-end championships?
There's four qualified already according to the Barclays ATP. Final site, Djokovic, Murray, Federer and Wawrinka. They've all qualified.
And then, who are the next four?
Berdych, Nishikura, Nadal, Ferrer, and then challenging for the final spots are Gasquet and Anderson.
I do love the format of the year-end championship stars. It's brilliant. And the fact that it's in London is even better for me. I've been there a couple of times.
Have you been to watch it?
I have. I saw Federer Djokovic. Was it last year or the year before? Yeah, I think it might have been the year before. Djokovic beat him in three. I mean, I just love the fact that all of the matches are like finals. I like Grand Slam finals because, you know, all the top players playing each other.
Were you crying? Really, really good. Were you crying?
No, I wasn't crying. It was the round robin. I was okay. He qualified in the end. And then I saw a couple of years before that Mardy Fish and play Federer, and he won that one. That was good as well, I think. But it was one of those meaningless ones. He'd already qualified. But anyway, it was nice to see him live.
What's it like in the O2 tennis?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, it's full sellout. Yeah, getting out of there was hard. It's just a mass of people. But anyway, yeah, no, it's really, really good atmosphere there. The seats at the top, though, I don't even understand how people can see what's going on from up there. It's just, they're probably can't even, they can not, probably not even see the player, you know, the players, they're that high up.
Don't know how people see it in Flushing Meadows right at the top. It's so high.
Yeah. You know, maybe they go for the atmosphere, really, but, you know, you're probably better off watching it on the telly. But, I managed to get some good tickets at on the sort of the lower tier, so that was quite good. Took my son once and then went with a husband a couple of years before that. So, yeah, it's good. I'm hoping to keep it here for a while. I love it.
You're planning on going this year?
I hope so, yeah. My job's a part-time one now, so I can hopefully work my hours around that. So that's why I couldn't go last year. The job wouldn't allow me.
Federer,
that would be a good one. Yeah. I had to watch a night match once, which was not really what I wanted to do. Just the getting out of the O2 at 11 o'clock at night with an 8-year-old was quite hard.
Wow.
I had to walk around some really dark alleys to get to my husband, who was waiting for me in the car somewhere. It was quite scary, actually. But day matches are good. So hopefully, you know, I can go to one of those this year.
Oh, you'll have to give us a live report.
I will do. I do kind of tend to wait to see who's playing who. I don't just, some people get tickets well in advance, but I like to see where I'm, you know, who I'm, I obviously want to see Federer, so I wait until his schedule, or because they only do it the night before, I think, so I have to wait, see who's playing and when.
Good shout for Federer to win this one if it's only a week tournament.
Yes, possibly. Small problem of Djokovic, though, still there. Last year was, quite sad when he pulled out at the end. There was that Davis Cup final, otherwise I think he probably would have struggled through.
Yeah, and Federer was making his 14th consecutive appearance since the final started.
That's something, isn't it?
It's record something.
Mm. And he won it 6 times, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Djokovic 3.
Yeah, but it's probably between those two again, I think.
I was just going to say, before we close it, do any of you remember your great floater shouts you made it in part one and how it went? Because I remember having a discussion with Umara. Umara was like very quick to pounce on my prediction, but there was no sound 6 hours later.
Oh God, yeah. No, we all got our men's singles champion right. That was pretty easy. And everything else was wrong, really. I picked Nishikori as my dark horse and he went out in the first round. And
I'm not sure, Dan, you know this. So the moment I had picked Anna Ivanovic, if you remember, and she lost in round one. And like within a minute, there was a tweet from Umara King saying, so much for your dangerous floater. And 6 hours later, Nishikori was out.
I held my hands up. I was like, you know, oh God, I obviously get this wrong as well. Who was your dark horse, Dan? We've forgotten.
Probably Federer. No.
No, you can't say that.
I honestly can't remember.
I think it was
Radvinska in the women's. She didn't do much, did she? Was it? What did she get to the quarters? I can't remember.
Did she? I can't remember.
Oh, Azarenka was it? Was it Azarenka? I don't know.
Yeah, I think your shout was Azarenka.
That was quarterfinal. So I can't remember who the man's one was. I'll have to listen back.
Disappointed when Azarenka went out. I thought, oh God, she's the only one who could possibly challenge Serena, because I just wanted a match. I wanted really good matches, and then Vinci did her thing. Who would have thought it? An all Italian final, hey?
And the Italian Prime Minister turned up as well.
Yeah, I think he came on his Air Force jet or something. Yeah. Overnight.
Wow.
That was something. That was really, really good. It was good. Good for, I don't know if you could say good for tennis, because I think some people would have loved to have seen, you know, a lot of people would have loved to have seen Serena do her slam, but it's nice to see other players win as well. Gives them a little bit of, you know, exposure. Poor things in Serena's shadow forever.
So some early shots, do you think she can do it next year?
Will Serena win the slam?
Yeah.
No. I don't think... I think it's too much. I think she's going through it big time this year, and she arranged the whole thing around her winning the majors. I'm not sure she's in her mind in it anymore. I hope she wins as many as is it Margaret Court who's won the North Star?
Yeah, 24, and Steffi's got 22.
Yeah. So I'm not sure she's. I hope she does, but I'm not sure she will. I think she'll probably win two. she'll probably win the US Open next year, and she's awesome at Wimbledon, so I struggle to see anyone else beating her there, but I think there were better clay court players than Serena. I think she had a lucky draw this year. And I can't remember the Australian Open for the females, but yeah.
So, Umaira, you agree with two, or you think she can actually win?
Well, it depends. We have to see how she bounces back from this, because this was a big deal. Sometimes, you know, these things can set you back a little bit. We'll have to see how she does in, you know, the year-end championships for the ladies. It's in Singapore, isn't it? But, yeah, you can't really write her off. But then again, you know, we'll have to see. The Australian Open is a long way away. It's not just around the corner, is it? So, I don't know. I reckon she'll win a couple, but then you never know. Strange life of women's tennis.
So the last segment, this off the cuff, I'm sure you both know. So I want you both to name your favorite moment or something related to the US Open. If there's something which you like, see.
I've already mentioned mine. I'm not sure it's a favorite moment, but it's a mind-blowing moment, and that was Kyrgios in the first round against Murray. either he's being paid to throw the match, or he's possibly the most extraordinary exhibitionist we've ever seen at tennis, because for a player to do that when the point matters, it defies belief. It defies belief. Go and watch it. YouTube it when you get off this.
I might have to. I didn't pick up on that.
Watch Kyrgios's under leg shot, and it was a big point. I think it was either love 30 to him on Murray's serve or something like that, and it was, I just couldn't believe it. And then you saw Kyrgios's coach's face, and he was just staring at him without saying a word, just looking at him with a devil eyes, just going, how dare you do that against Andy Murray? And Andy Murray was just chuckling to himself on the other side of the court, going, I can't believe he's just done that. But anyway, yeah, go on YouTube, it's crazy.
He did something similar in I can't remember which tournament it was earlier in the year, where he just wasn't bothering. And he lost the whole game, he just didn't bother
Wimbledon,
to hit it back.
Wimbledon, when he walked
was it
across
Wimbledon?
The court, yeah, and he didn't try to hit the ball back, and he got a lot
and then
of criticism
he then. Got accused of, you know, not trying hard enough. And
yes. And then there was some of the old Australian legend players were putting it down to his race, which was unfortunate, and saying you wouldn't get that from an Aussie, which was terrible. But yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no. But it was terrible to do that. You know, it's a terrible example to children who are watching you. And if he's the best Australian player or the most talented, and they're watching him do that, I'd just say you've got to ignore everything he does, because, you know, he's also got the abuse that he gave to Wawrinka as well.
And he didn't get picked for the Davis Cup, did he?
No, I don't think so.
No, I saw a picture of him standing on his own while the others were going. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but you also have to imagine the extremes. You are talking about careers here, but imagine the extremes, like Davis Cup, Hewitt is still slogging out. And the two extremes of Australian tennis, I would say, currently.
Yeah, I don't think he could have possibly been considered for a team sport. I mean, considering, you know, obviously what he does. He doesn't even pay for himself, let alone a team. Forget the team.
Hewitt's his coach, so, I think. I think it is Leighton Hewitt is his coach. And Leighton Hewitt played the doubles, didn't he?
Hewitt did play the doubles.
So, you know, that just shows you if Leighton Hewitt's got any influence over the Australian team and he's the coach of Kyrgios, and Kyrgios can't get in that side, then that tells you all you need to know about his attitude to a team sport.
So, Mara, your favourite moment or episode or whatever it may be related to the US Open?
I'm trying to think now. Aside from the obvious ones, I mean, obviously the ladies' final was in, you know, I think it was good for those two involved, you know, especially for Panetta, as she was, you know, she's retired, and she's, for her, like, kind of being at the top of her game. So that was a nice moment, Vinci beating Serena. And I think that the interview that she gave on court, did you guys see that? I think just the crowd loved her after that. I really thought that she would, I think she got most of the support in the final, but her interviews were so funny, and she was just like, I can't believe I've done this. I had booked my flight to go home. she was funny. Yeah, she goes, I had to book my flight to go home. I didn't think I was going to beat anybody.
That's madness, isn't it?
Mm. And then she'd, you know, her just, you know, taking the trophy off of Panetta, you know, just little things like that. I think she's a breath fresh. Yeah, I just wish she'd done it a little bit sooner instead of now. But I think that was kind of a good moment for women's tennis, especially. And then Federer and his sabre, that was nice for me personally. I like that. That worked well until the end. But yeah, that was kind of my
I think I'm also going to stick to women's tennis. For me personally, I was really glad to see Venus Williams.
Yeah, she did well.
She was solid. Even against Serena, I thought she was solid. Because she's been so much, like, literally out of performance levels for last, what, 2 years now? She's literally nowhere in the picture. And suddenly to have a strong Grand Slam tournament was very good to see. I'm a huge fan of Venus Williams, so I was very happy to see Venus play well. For me, that's something I really enjoyed watching after a while.
What do you guys make of her playing Serena, though? Because there was this, you know, sort of talk of her being really difficult for her and not wanting to stand in the way of her sister's dream and, you know, history and all this thing. It must have been so hard for her. And people even saying that she might have let her win and things like that. I know it went to 3 sets and, you know, it was quite a close match. But what do you guys think of that?
They've been saying that about Venus for years with Serena.
But specifically this time, yeah, with the slam on.
It's terrible. It's terrible to suggest it. I can't say what Venus is thinking. No one can, other than Venus. We do know that the father is very influential on them both, but I cannot see for a second. Both of them are absolutely adamant that they try the hardest when they play each other. And that's all you can ask for, really. Serena's the best female tennis player, so she's gonna win more, especially at the moment. I remember Venus beating Serena quite often as well when Serena was first coming through and didn't have the experience. So, you know, Venus is just the older sister, and like Sri was saying, has had the injury problems. So I don't think it's anything to do with anything underhand. It'd be horrible if it was, but you can see why it would be an awkward situation playing your younger sister who's on for a Grand Slam. Didn't they play at Wimbledon as well? You know, so it's,
I think they did.
The last two.
But
last
that
two
was slams. Far more one-sided than this time.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But there was also Djokovic coming and saying he can't imagine how these sisters are able to do it so many times. Djokovic came out and said, I can't even dream of playing my brothers even once.
Yeah. It'd just be awkward, wouldn't it? I don't know. It depends how you embrace it, I suppose. They've played each other that many times. Maybe they're used to it by now, but
it depends. I mean, I guess if one sibling is really competitive, how they would react if the other beat them, and, you know, if they're quite okay about it, then that's different match altogether. But yeah, I can see that it can be awkward around the dinner table at the end of the day when she's just won a Grand Slam off her sister. But I guess they're used to it now. We didn't mention my favorite tennis player, Petra Kvitova, who went out in the what round did she go out in? I forgot.
Quarter final to Panetta, wasn't it?
Not bad. But I think she was struggling with the heat, and she's asthmatic and she's ill, and I'm making all the excuses for her now. Yeah.
She was set up.
It was, they put her in the midday heat when they knew she couldn't play. But she's got mononucleosis? Something like that? Is that what it's called? She's not, so I think that, yeah, she's just, there were some points when she couldn't even walk. You could see she was just struggling. But yeah, we forgot to mention her. Maybe next time.
Yeah. So before we close out, any plugs from you, Dan? Anything?
I haven't got any plugs. I've got my dog barking.
Wondered what happened.
I was thinking of what kind of a mimicry plug was.
My dog barking at no one.
I thought you were plugging some new ventriloquism.
I've got a tactics pod coming up this week, and I'm on the main pod tomorrow. My first appearance for ages, so that should be fun as long as we win. If we don't, I'm gonna be grim. I'm gonna be more negative than you've ever heard me in my life if we lose today.
God, please no.
No, yeah.
And Umara, what about you? Any plugs? Anything new coming up?
I was in the middle of writing something. I'm gonna finish that off. It was about Brendan Rodgers. Surprise, surprise.
Is it going to change based on today?
Probably, yeah. I've written, you know, 2 paragraphs. So I'll probably have to scrap the whole thing and start all over again. I'm due to be on the Desi pod this week, so look out for that. That's if Gags doesn't change his mind over tomorrow. No, but yeah, so that will be a fun one, hopefully. Yeah, so just look out for those.
And from my side, we just recorded a global pod this morning with me, Kaelin, Leroy and Simon Brundish. We were talking about how an ideal model of recruitment is and how LFC are doing and how LFC are applying whom they are recruited. So it's an introduction pod. We are sure we are going to have multiple follow-up podcasts on the topic. So a high-level podcast. So that's something to look out for. And always a plug for Anfield Index app, channel app. Please download it if you are using iPhone. And that's about it. This is a wrap for episode 2. We should be back soon with episode 3, looking at the year-end championship. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.